This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. Some years ago, I read a book about freshwater eels published in 2011, written by James Prosek. It describes the life history of eels that defies the imagination. But more than that, it includes world travel. And to quote Paul Greenberg's New York Times review from 2011, Prosek travels to a series of key eel haunts around the world, a river in the Catskills of New York, the traditional Maori eeling grounds of New Zealand, and an odd little volcanic island in the South Pacific called Pohnpei, unquote. Prosek's writing is vivid. You feel the heat and wetness of the tropics and the chill and force of the undammed Delaware River in November, surrounded by the beautiful Catskills. And thus, I was smitten by eels and their mysterious and worldwide ways. And from then on, whenever I talked with someone who fishes, I would ask if they'd ever caught an eel around here, thinking of its amazing life history. How, if someone caught an eel in our waters, it would have traveled thousands and thousands of miles from its birthplace in the Sargasso Sea east of Bermuda to the Mississippi, up the Wisconsin River, maybe up on the Kickapoo, maybe up into one of its streams, to live out its adult life for many years here among us, and then the urge to migrate back to its birthplace overtakes it, and they disappear downstream, down and back out into the ocean over thousands of miles, finding their breeding place. Most people have said yes to my "have you ever caught an eel" question. Invariably, they say, by mistake, of course, but they don't speak of catching many. Our American eel is called Anguilla rostrata. They are an eastern North America species that breed in the Atlantic. There are at least 15 species of freshwater eels around the world. Oddly enough, none on the west coast of North America. The European eel is Anguilla anguilla, and they also breed in the Sargasso Sea in the Atlantic. And there are more species that breed in the vast Pacific Ocean and migrate to streams and ponds in Pacific Islands and Asia. Reading this book, I was also taken by its author, James Prosek. Prosek's own life history is quite fascinating, perhaps because this is an area known for its trout fishing here. You may have heard of Prosek. He is that person who knew exactly what his passions were at a young age, publishing his first book, an acclaimed book on trout, an illustrated history with more than 70 beautiful watercolors. This is a book I guarantee you will love. And he was an undergrad at Yale when this book was published. He was 20. And since 1996, he has published many more books. From his website, James Prosek is an artist, writer, and naturalist whose work pays homage to the history of art and natural sciences while addressing contemporary environmental concerns. His diverse body of work is the result of extensive travel and field observation. Prosek creates paintings, drawings, and sculptures that evoke the immense biodiversity of our planet and its imaginative potential. The interconnectedness of nature, the ephemeral qualities of boundaries, and the loss of cultural and biological diversity are major themes of Prosek's work. He has published over a dozen books and exhibited his art globally. Here's part of a review I found in the New York Times by Paul Greenberg in 2011, a review of the book on eels. Prosek has made his reputation as a kind of underwater Audubon. His trout watercolors collected in a book when he was still an undergraduate at Yale bear those particular exciting hues that still living fish possess, a quality that fish catchers cherish. As Eels demonstrates, Prosek is every bit as good a writer as a painter. Perhaps this is because both his art and writing draw their inspiration from a similar challenge to express the ineffable, fading aspect of the natural world in the industrialized era, the feeling of bright colors slipping through your fingers. It is this quality that makes Eels much more than a fish book. It is an impassioned defense of nature itself. And so today I will start to read segments from James Prosek's book called Eels, An Exploration from New Zealand to the Sargasso of the World's Most Mysterious Fish. Chapter 1. A Mysterious Fish. Conjecture about what an eel is exactly, or where its place is in the tree of life, has racked the brains of more than a few naturalists. Its limbless, elongated body led some to believe it was related to the snake. The Greek naturalist and poet Oppian wrote in the 2nd century A.D., "Nothing more is known than what people repeat about the loves of Roman eels and snakes. Some say that they pair, that full of eagerness, drunk with desire, the Roman eel comes out of the sea to go and meet her mate." As late as 1833, Jerome V.C. Smith wrote in his Natural History of the Fishes of Massachusetts, quote, "On the whole, we view the eel in the light of a water serpent being the connecting link between purely aquatic and amphibious reptiles," unquote. The eel, however, is a fish, though it is a fish like no other. The freshwater eel of the genus Anguilla evolved more than 50 million years ago, giving rise to 15 separate species. Most migratory fish, such as salmon and shad, are anadromous, spawning in freshwater and living their adult lives in saltwater. The freshwater eel is one of the few fishes that does the opposite, spawning in the sea and spending its adulthood in lakes, rivers, and estuaries, a life history known as catadromy. In Greek, ana means up and kata means down, the prefixes suggesting the direction the fish migrates to reproduce. The fish of this book is a member of the family Anguillidae and the order Anguilliformes, which includes the moray and the conger eels, fish that spend their entire lives in the sea. The freshwater eel is not related to other eel-like fish, such as electric eels and lamprey eels, which are not true eels but are evolutionarily quite distinct. Throughout the book, I sometimes refer to the catadromous freshwater eel as an anguillid eel. The various species of freshwater eels occupy rivers and streams on the west coast of Africa, Madagascar, India, Indonesia, Australia, China, Korea, Japan, New Zealand, and other islands in Polynesia, Micronesia, and Melanesia, with unique spawning areas in the Indo-Pacific. A new 16th species of freshwater eel, Anguilla luzonensis, was recently discovered in northern Luzon Island in the Philippines. But among catadromous fishes, the eel is the only one that travels to the depths of the oceans so far offshore. Salmon, Mike Miller, an eel scientist, told me, can imprint on a river system. They are born in the river system. They go out in the ocean and they come back to the same river. It's not that bloody hard to do. In the case of the eel, you're born in the open ocean. You can't see anything around you except blue water. It's just blue water until they come to the coastal areas, where they first enter estuaries and streams at random. And then, 10 to 30 years later, when they leave the river, they have to swim all the way out to the same place in the ocean again. And how do they do that? Unquote. The American and European freshwater eels emerge from eggs suspended in the ocean, specifically the western part of a subtropical gyre in the North Atlantic, somewhere east of Bermuda, called the Sargasso Sea. The Sargasso Sea is named after sargassum weed, a prevalent seaweed that floats on its surface. One story has it that the name sargassum is from the Portuguese word for wild grape and describes the weed's bulbous floats. The sargasso covers 2 million square miles of the Atlantic and was notorious among sailors for being calm and quiet, like an ocean desert. At the heart of the Bermuda Triangle, the sargasso became synonymous with lost and abandoned vessels and mystery. The only reason scientists know this is that baby eels in their larval stage, called leptocephaly, have been found drifting near the surface of the ocean thousands of miles from any shore. No one has ever been able to find a spawning adult or witness a freshwater eel spawning in the wild. For eel scientists, solving the mystery of eel reproduction remains a kind of holy grail. Wherever eels are born, they're relentless in their efforts to return to their oceanic womb. I can tell you this from personal experience because I've tried to keep them in a home aquarium. The morning after the first night of my attempt, I found eels slithering around the floor of my kitchen and living room. After securing a metal screen over the tank with heavy stones, I was able to contain them, but soon they were rubbing themselves raw against the screen. Then one died trying to escape via the filter outflow. When I screened the outflow, they banged their heads against the glass until they had what appeared to be seizures and died. That's when I stopped trying to keep eels. Eels are wondrous in their ability to move. They're often found in lakes, ponds, and post holes with no visible connection to the sea, leaving the inquisitive shaking their heads. On wet nights, eels are known to cross over land from a pond to a river, or over an obstruction, by the thousands, using each other's moist bodies as a bridge. Young eels can climb moss-covered vertical walls, forming a braid with their bodies. Farmers in Normandy say that eels will leave rivers on spring nights and find their way to vegetable patches to feed on peas. The yearly journeys millions of adult eels make from rivers to oceans must be among the greatest unseen migrations of any creature on the planet. In the course of these journeys, which span thousands of miles, eels face a long list of dangers: hydroelectric dams, river diversions, pollution, disease, predation by striped bass, beluga whales, and cormorants, among others, fishing by humans, and changes in ocean currents or temperature structure due to global warming, which may confound eels during their migrations. From Aristotle through Pliny, Walton, and Linnaeus, great naturalists through time have put forward various theories as to how eels make new eels. That the young emerge from the mud, Aristotle. That eels are bred from a particular dew that falls in the months of May and June, Walton. That they multiply by rubbing themselves against rocks, Pliny. That they were viviparous, bearing live young rather than laying eggs, Linnaeus. One problem was that no one could identify sperm or eggs in eels. Over a 40-year period in the late 1700s at the famous eel fishery in Camaccio, Italy, the biologist Spallanzani calculated that more than 152 million adult migratory eels had been caught and cleaned, not one of which was found to be pregnant. No one could say for sure whether eels even had gender, because no one could identify their reproductive organs. It's now known that the sex organs of eels mature only after the adults leave the mouths of rivers for their oceanic spawning grounds. In the late 19th century, a young medical student named Sigmund Freud was assigned by his professor, Karl Claus, to investigate what had been postulated to be the testes of the male eel. During several months at the Zoological Experimental Station in Trieste, Italy, Freud dissected more than 400 eels, looking for loops of white matter festooned in the body cavity. His 1877 paper on eels, Observations on the form and the fine structure of looped organs of the eel, organs considered as testes, was Freud's first published work. One can't help but wonder if the time he spent that summer, in his 20th year, dissecting eels, played some role in the development of his later psychosexual theories. Needless to say, the testes of the eel would not be confirmed until 1897, when a sexually mature male eel was caught in the Straits of Messina between mainland Italy and the island of Sicily. The larval stage of the eel bears little resemblance to the adult. It is a tiny, transparent creature with a thin head, a body shaped like a willow leaf, and outward-pointing teeth. The larvae of freshwater eels were originally thought to be that of a separate genus of fish. Then in 1896, two Italian biologists, Grassi and Calandruccio, watched a leptocephalus metamorphose in a tank into an eel. The most convincing evidence to support the theory that freshwater eels were born in salt water. Still, though some speculated that eels spawned in the Mediterranean, no one had yet dreamed that the freshwater eels from Europe hatched in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. In 1904, Johannes Schmidt, a young Danish fisheries biologist, got a job aboard the Thor, a Danish research vessel, studying the breeding habits of food fishes such as cod and herring. One day in the summer of that year, a tiny fish larva showed up in one of their fine mesh trawls west of the Faroe Islands in the Atlantic Ocean. Based on the number of vertebrae, 115, in the hypoural bones at the end of the vertebral column, Schmidt identified the larva as that of the European eel, Anguilla anguilla, the first to be recognized as such outside of the Mediterranean Sea. A year before, Schmidt had made an auspicious betrothal to the heiress to the Carlsberg Brewery, a Danish company that had donated generously to marine research. Outfitted with schooners capable of ocean crossings, towing fine mesh nets, and catching hundreds of larvae, he was able to show that the farther from the European coast he went, the smaller the eel larvae became. After almost two decades of cruising the Atlantic, Schmidt was able to assert that both the American and European eels spawned somewhere in the southwestern part of the Atlantic, the Sargasso Sea. Quote, "No other instance is known among fishes of a species requiring a quarter of the circumference of the globe to complete its life history," Schmidt wrote in 1923. "Larval migrations of such extent and duration are altogether unique in the animal kingdom." Schmidt and his colleagues went on to search for the spawning areas of other freshwater eel species in the Indo-Pacific region, but with limited success. No other discoveries of anguillid eel spawning areas came until 1991, when an expedition led by Katsumi Tsukamoto of the Ocean Research Institute in Tokyo found the spawning grounds of the Japanese eel. The Japanese scientist had searched unsuccessfully for the spawning area of Anguilla japonica for six decades. But on this particular new moon night in the Pacific Ocean, in the Philippine Sea to the west of Guam, Tsukamoto and the other scientists on board netted the smallest larvae of that species that had ever been collected and finally determined the location of the spawning area of the Japanese freshwater eel. Still, they had not captured any adults. Mike Miller, then a graduate student from the University of Maine, Orono, who was on the fateful expedition, described what it was like to look for spawning eels in the open ocean. "You could be 50 meters away and not find anything," he said. "It's an issue of scale. The ocean is huge. To get where eels are spawning is statistically very low probability, almost impossible. You'd have to be very lucky," unquote. It didn't help that every previous year in which they'd made a cruise to look for the adults, they'd run afoul of the elements. Quote, I can't remember a single eel cruise when there wasn't a typhoon that caused us to change course. Miller added, it's almost like Poseidon is trying to keep the eels secret. Unquote. That's the greatest beauty I find in eels, the idea of a creature whose very beginnings can elude humans and the potential that idea holds for our imaginations. Like the people I met in my travels, I get a good feeling from eels. The nights and early mornings I've spent with them during the fall migration have pulsed with energy and light. Standing in an eel fisherman's river weir in the cool September dark, watching the vein-like ropes of fish fill his womb of wood and stone, I've come to believe the Maori yarns about encounters they've had with the water guardians. We allow ourselves to believe that nature can be explained. In the process, we confine nature to those explanations. The eels, through their simplicity of form, their preference for darkness, and their grace of movement in the opposite direction of every other fish, have helped me to see things for which there is no easy classification, things that can't be quantified or solved, and get to the essence of experience. They have been my way back. That's the end of the first chapter. Next week, I'll read about James Prosek's visit to see Ray Turner, one of the few people in the United States who legally trap adult eels on their migration on only two September nights on the Delaware River. Each year, he builds and rebuilds an ancient, ingenious weir in the river, and we will learn more of the life history of this amazing fish. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. Thanks for listening.